Welcome to the Fire and Earth Podcast with your hosts, Jason Mefford and Kathy Groover. Fire and Earth, giving you the keys to unlock your limitless potential.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Fire and Earth Podcast. I am your co-host, Kathy Groover.
And I'm Jason Mefford. And today we have my good friend, I'm going to try to say this right, Denise Soler Cox. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I did it right that time. And I am so stoked to have Denise on because she is probably one of the most authentic people that I know. Aww. And I say that honestly. And I think people listening today are going to see that come through. But just a little background. She is an award-winning filmmaker. She has already done this is an amazing film. And we'll make sure and link that up in the show notes for people to be able to go out and see that. But Denise, maybe just take a minute and tell people kind of what you do, because you are amazing. I mean, your client list is like the Fortune 500, right? I mean, it started name-dropping here, everybody would be like, holy shit, you know, she's worked with these companies. Yeah, she does. I mean, you're legit, girl.
Thank you. Thanks so much. So yeah, I got started 7 years ago with an idea that I had for a very long time. It was an idea that came to me when I was 26, and it was it kind of landed on my heart as something that I needed to do, but I could not summon up the courage to actually do it. And I really fought with my demons for 17 years. And until one day I just said, you know what, I have to do it, and I'm going to disregard any of these crazy feelings that keep coming up that were basically just like what I call enoughness feelings, like you're not good enough, you're not even a filmmaker, you have no training, you're not skinny enough. I mean, any enough I was like putting on myself and delaying this project, which was a film. And until one day I just said, screw it, I'm going to be enough to make one phone call. And then I was enough to do the next thing and enough to do the next thing until 2 years later, I had a documentary film that I made with my partner, who's an Oscar-nominated documentarian based in Denver. And we've been on the road with that film now for 3.5 years. And yeah, it's kind of weird, like to even, I mean, yeah, the client list is Fortune 500 companies. The client list is really beyond, I had this vision, and I knew that it would be, I had a sense that it would be big, but it was hard to quantify like how it would end up looking. And so when I see the list of the companies that I've worked with, I'm impressed too.
Good for you.
Slightly in disbelief. And they keep calling. So that's, you know, so basically I've been on tour with that film now for 3.5 years, and we've been in production now with another film. So yeah, life is good. And it's crazy when, you know, I really decided to go full throttle with this big idea and kind of what could happen after a person does that. You know, it's pretty crazy.
That's awesome. Well, so tell us a little, what is your first film about for people that don't know?
Yeah. So it's called Being Enya, and Enya is, it's E-N-Y-E, and it's the phonetic spelling of the extra letter in the Spanish alphabet, which is the Enya, which that you see in piña, pineapple, señora.
The Enya with the N with above it.
Yes, exactly. And so that's, the film is called Being Enya, and it's my life story, and it's about what it was like for me to grow up in the suburbs of Manhattan, not really feeling Latina enough or American enough, really feeling confused about my identity, not knowing where I fit in, and really believing that I was the only person that felt like that. I really had the sense that it was just me, and that I couldn't even put into words the loneliness that I experienced. Mm-hmm. And it's important to note that there was no YouTube, there was no BuzzFeed Latino, there was nobody making content that made me feel connected, except for some of the really iconic Latina authors, of which there are only about 5, and I'd read all their books, but it still didn't offer me a sense of connection that I was kind of aching for. And so the film talks about that. And then we get to meet a bunch of people that I met kind of along the way in my journey. Some of them are famous. And really the outcome is a bunch of people that are part of this demo, which is, we're the children of immigrants from Spanish-speaking countries. We were born in the United States. And so we're American, but our parents are from a Spanish-speaking country. So we very much also feel that we're from there as well. And so the outcome is a bunch of people got to feel like they weren't alone, which was really what my intention was. And it's been a great honor to be able to give people that gift of letting them know, like, you know what, I thought I was alone and you're not, and we're not. And now this is what we're called and this is our experience. And so I had a chance to validate what I say is a very American experience.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I agree with that. It's also a very human experience. I mean, because there are times when I was growing up, and I mean, I go back generations, there were times that I felt weird and that I didn't fit in, that I was alone because I was bullied and picked on for pick any number of things. Your nose is too big, your butt's too small, your hair is too bad. You know, it's like we've all had that experience, and you were able to put that through your cultural eyes, which I think is amazing.
Thank you.
I think every human can relate to that. We've all felt like an outcast at some point, like we're not enough, that we don't fit in. I mean, I think we've all felt that way, you know. Good for you. That's an awesome message to be sending, especially, did you do this specifically for youth so that they don't feel alone, or is this for adults? I mean, did you have that in mind when you did the film?
I really just, it's funny, a lot of people ask me that, and I really just did it because I, like, my partner calls it a compulsion. Mm. I did it because I felt like I couldn't live another day without doing it. And so it was mostly like an expression, and it's to, like, to anyone that ever felt like this is dedicated to you, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it totally delights me that more people outside the community, we'll say, outside the Latino community, resonate with it, because it's true. It is a human story. It's outside looking in. It's like by design, we just believe we're alone, and we're not. It's a lie, but we constantly have to be reminded of it, you know?
Well, that's why, because when we first met and we were talking about kind of what you did, right? And again, you know, the whole Enya idea of my parents are immigrants. So again, I'm kind of like split between these two worlds, right? And any immigrant family, you know, feels that way or has that. But as we talked about, you know, some of those feelings and the things of, you know, not enough and kind of like almost this whole familial kind of tie, right? Like, mm-hmm. like our family has so much power over us and over our beliefs. And it was like, as we were talking about and you were sharing some of the things that these people were experiencing. And then I watched the film and I'm like, holy shit, you know, I mean, here I am, right? I mean, white male, Northern European descent, my family came over in the 1700s. I mean, you don't get more American than that, right? Mm-hmm. But I could totally relate to and see, even in my family, some of those same things, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, because what are some of the things, you know, again, you talked about, you know, not feeling enough. What are a lot of the things that these people are feeling? And then what can we kind of do to help stop that, right? Get us, slap us around and get us out of that feeling.
So that's interesting that you should ask. So this is something that's fascinating to me. I will say from like a sociological perspective, and that is first that Latino culture is collective culture. And so meaning we're about the family, we prioritize family over self. And it's, you know, it's informed by Catholicism, right? And it's informed by things that, you know, where you respect the hierarchy. So like respecting elders, right? And so like there's this whole culture of, we don't think about the individual, we think about the group. And then there's self-reliant culture, which is the dominant culture here in the United States, informed by Calvinism, Northern European ideology, right, and religion. And that's like independence, singularity, and self. And so neither one are wrong. But here's where it gets interesting, is that Latinos here in the United States, especially Enyas, especially those of us that have that connection to that immigrant parent, we feel that part of the reason why we feel so stuck and in between and like we don't belong is because we grow up in self-reliance where the focus is on self or me, mm-hmm. but then our families and our parents reinforce it's not about you, it's selfish to be about you. And right. if they're going to be about you, then you're not about us. And what happens is they end up feeling like when they make decisions, and this is what my coaching group is about, when they make decisions about themselves. So like, let's say they go to college and say, I'm going to be a lawyer, or I'm going to go do something, start a business. And it takes them out of the home. The most interesting thing happens, and the most popular word that I hear from my community after they see my film and when they're in touch with what they really want to do with their life is they say, I feel like I want to do fill in the blank, but I feel like I'm betraying my family if I do that. It is the most bizarre thing. It doesn't make sense. And especially in a context of self-reliant context, no. Because if you tell someone here in the United States, well, how could they say that? It doesn't add up. but tell someone from a Latino lens or the collective lens and they can completely get it. And so really my work is to help people make that distinction and to tease those two things apart for people and help them make a decision for themselves. Like, how collective do you want to be and how self-reliant? And because it has to be a decision, you know, it's really like creating an identity, you know, because it feels often like for many of us that we have to abide by two sets of rules that are absolutely conflicting. And so when we say yes to this, we say no to our, when I say yes to me and my family or my aspirations, it feels like I'm saying no to my family and vice versa. Right. And so that's a difficult compromise. And that's why people often, and especially Latinas, that's why there's so few of us that are out there leading companies, starting businesses. That's why, even though it is on the rise, Latina business owners are like the fastest growing group. But it's because I believe that we're beginning to transcend this, but I still believe that there is a lack of understanding of the mechanics as to what's going on in the background. And so I kind of see myself as someone trying to educate people and kind of distinguish this thing and then provide them the support so they can go for the thing they want to do.
Yeah, that's so fascinating because there is that conflict there. And there's been so many fiction movies about that, about, you know, you want to keep the traditions of your culture, but you want to Americanize yourself. And trying to find that balance point has got to be difficult. And I've seen that a lot in the Asian cultures. It's like family is so important and you want to keep the language and you want to keep the tradition, but you also want to go to American university and you want, you know, so what's the balance point? I mean, how do you juggle those two worlds?
Yeah, so it's funny that you bring up the Asian thing. I forget what that movie was called, but that one, Crazy Rich Asians. Yeah. All my Latino friends were sending me that movie. They were like, Denise, you have to see this movie. It's exactly what you talk about all the time. And I watched it, and it's like you could just dissect it. And honestly, like we're at the phase right now where it's like the more media can be made about this, the better. Because, you know, we just expose it versus like, you know, because it's, you know, we could, they're talking about this in sociology class, but it's like impossible to grasp on a real life level, let's say. But when we see it happening on the screen, whether it's a narrative like that film and a comedy even, right? But we also saw it on My Big Fat Greek Wedding. It was very much in that film as well. And then my film, and then my next film. But like the more we see it in the media, the more we honestly just get a chance to talk about it and realize, first, we're not alone with the struggle. And then second, like the emergence of my work, which is reinvention and deciding, you know, really, really creating the identity that works for your best life, you know, but that conversation can't happen without, it's almost like it can't even happen without a Crazy Rich Asian. It can't happen without seeing it for what it is and how funny it is, because it's so often painful and upsetting, you know? So.
And you don't really realize it, like you said, until you see it. Because again, you know, now that I know you, I'm looking more for this kind of stuff, right? And even as you're talking here, you know, about kind of the community and the collective versus the individualistic, right? I mean, so again, I come from that Northern European background. So I've always been taught to be independent, you know, pull up your big boy pants and get stuff done. But yet my family also was like family first.
So
I was still getting, you know, some of both of this, you know, and so it's interesting that that still kind of carried forward, you know, and I'm guessing again that, you know, part of it probably is because of, I mean, my family was farmers up until, you know, like the last generation. And so as they moved across the country as farmers, you know, in that farming community, you had kids to run the farm, right? And so it was like, I mean, that whole collective, you got to take care of the family, because if the family doesn't pitch in and do what they need to do, then we're all going to die, right? So some of that collectivism probably carried further through the generations in my family. So, you know, again, even though I know that I'm trying to be independent, I was taught to be independent, there is that collectivism side of it that I think, again, sometimes now that I'm more conscious about it, it shows up in some of my limiting beliefs.
Interesting.
That is interesting.
Oh my gosh, that's fascinating.
Yeah. And so I think, like you said, obviously newer immigrant families, you know, or groups that have a very strong cultural kind of tie, like we talked about, you know, the mm-hmm. Greeks and my big fat Greek wedding, you know, crazy rich Asians, you know, the Latino population. It's all, there's a very strong cultural component to that as well. But we all have some of that carry through. And that's why I love what you said. I mean, what you're doing is more humanitarian and it's trying to help mm-hmm. us start to have these discussions and realize, you know, it's okay to be selfish, because in some ways, the more selfish we are, the more we can give to other people too. And again, yes. that's like this whole ironic oxymoron that people have going on. What do you mean? If I, you know, do this, then I'm actually helping somebody else? Yeah.
Right. But it's funny. It's like, that doesn't seem to add up in Latino culture. I'll say for the most part, I don't want to make a sweeping generalization, but I did a video. I think I told you about this video, and it was, you know, why it's a mistake to put your family first. And I was trying to be polarizing. Right. And but then I kind of explained it, put your mask on first. And then I did this whole thing. And anyone that watched it, that would say is a millennial or younger, they were getting back to me and they were like, oh my God, I so needed to see this. I so needed to get permission. Thank you for giving me permission, or thanks for helping me with this, because I feel so guilty, blah, blah, blah. And, okay, there we go. But then the older people, I got comments like crazy. And one of them was the most hurtful thing that's ever been told to me. And basically someone said, you know, you're a disgrace to the Latino community for making this video. And that one really hurt. But then there was another one that said, you know, what you're saying in this video is going to erode everything that is Latino about being Latino. And so, like, that's why I shouldn't do it. And it was fascinating because there are markers. There are markers that say, like, this makes you American. This makes you or Latino. Let's just say this makes you self-reliant. This makes you. But really, we are a mix. And we're. But oftentimes we have a dominant kind of way that we see the world, you know, mm-hmm. But it is interesting to me the way that people evaluate other people. And this also goes across, you know, culture, ethnicity. This is a definite human thing. Like other people kind of saying you are this because of this, and these are the markers to this, and that's what makes you that. And, to me, that's fascinating and detrimental, and also really detrimental to use if you don't really know what you're. If you don't have an awareness of what you're doing, do you know what I'm saying? If it's not in the positive. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I'm thinking, as you were saying that, two things popped into my head, one of which is the African-American community and women who were forced, like they had to straighten their hair. And now they're going back to the natural hair because they're embracing mm-hmm. that cultural aspect. And there were so many people who were like, you're not really a Black woman because you're straightening your hair. You're trying to be white. You're trying to be American. You know, that whole cultural thing. But as you were talking about the influence of where is that balance point, what struck me as I'm an only child, and I'm wondering how much of this is nurture. We can argue nurture versus nature forever, but it's like I went to college, I left home, I drove cross country immediately. And there were so many people in my community back in Pittsburgh who they left home, but they never left Pittsburgh. They stayed there. Mm-hmm. They went to school there. They still live in, mm-hmm. near their families. And I was like, I'm out. And I wonder mm-hmm. if there's because I'm an only child and was raised to go be independent, mm-hmm. I just had a different mindset, or I shot out of the womb, certainly independent. Do you actually see, does it matter if you've come from a big family or if you're an only child? Do you see a connection between the whole nurture versus nature thing?
That's actually a really good question. I see it more in not as much like nature nurture, but more in the coming from the homeland country versus being born here conversation. So there's U.S. Latinos, and we say we're from, you know, Puerto Rico. Like I'm Puerto Rican and Cuban. That's where my parents are from, right? And so and people from the homeland countries seem to have, you know, they have a different experience. They didn't have to grapple with the either world, like either ideology. They're in one, and they survive and thrive in a single ideology, you know. Mm-hmm. And so they look at us as we're more American, and then we struggle because we don't feel American enough, and then we're rejected by the people from the homeland because then we don't seem to be enough for them either. And I talk about them like they're a group, but there is a collective kind of thinking on this, which is fascinating to me. Mm-hmm. So that's the what it kind of, I would say, if there's any like dichotomy, it's more it lives there. And what's interesting is I screened my film several years ago for many, wasn't a private home, but most people that were there were from the Harvard School of Education. And in the Q&A, it was like this really strong listening. Like they were so curious to understand the film and the ideas behind the film. And apparently two women were there. One was from a South American country, and another one was a US born Latina like me. And the South American one approached the other one, the US based one, and apologized. And she said, I feel like I haven't really, I've been treating you in a certain way that's been unfair. And I just want to take responsibility for it. And to me, that was such a big thing.
Wow.
To have a moment of awareness for her, you know, that she was able to see that she was not being very tolerant. And the funny thing is I don't really address that in the film, but it's very much there if you can see it, I guess.
Yeah.
You know?
Hmm. Well, and I think, you know, as we're talking about this, you know, and trying to, again, you know, I don't fit in here, but I don't fit in over there, you know, kind of thing. I think, you know, again, this comes back to kind of probably a general human thing, where is the world tells us that we're supposed to be a certain way,
mm-hmm.
right? It doesn't matter where you kind of come from. And one of the big movements that we're seeing more and more of, and probably one of the reasons why your work resonates with so many people, is a lot of us are kind of stuck in the middle and we're like, well, now hold it just a minute, right? I don't necessarily want to buy into whatever I'm told I'm supposed to do. I'm a little different than everybody else, and I just really want to be me. Mm-hmm. And so again, right, it's like, but a lot of us, you know, even like you said, when we started talking, you said, I didn't have the courage to do it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because again, you kind of felt like, well, I have these feelings, I want to do this, but I'm not really supposed to, because that kind of goes against the rules, right, of whatever it happens to be. And I think we all, in different aspects of our life, we all have that, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And so having the courage to actually be authentic and say, no, I want to do this, right? Mm-hmm. Hey, I'm a 20 something Latina woman, and I want to be the CEO of a Fortune 500 company. Hey, mm-hmm. if you want to do that, great, go do it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That we should have the courage to actually do it. Or if somebody says, hey, you know what? I just want to be a mom. That's what mm-hmm. I want to do. I don't mm-hmm. want to go the corporate route. But if that's really what the person wants to do, then go do it.
Right.
Instead of kind of being stuck in doing what you think everybody else expects you to do, right?
Right.
So
it's,
I mean,
very hard though. It's very hard.
It's very hard.
Because it's like that belief system, because we know there's something else possible, I feel like, is that, you know, but it's so hard to see ourselves that way. And it's because of what we feel like, you know, I heard once someone say, like, you really don't know your negative belief systems or your limiting belief systems, because if you did, then they wouldn't limit you.
Yeah, right.
If you really, then you would just know what they were, you know? And
yeah.
So I feel like a lot of it is for us not knowing that's like, hang on, that's just how I see the world. And
right.
Which is why I start, you know, the film really unlocks like a new, I say that it helps feel like a fish when it jumps out of water. Like one of my favorite sayings of all time is the three mysteries of life are water to the bird. Water to the fish, air to the bird, and man to himself.
Yeah.
And so I say like that my work is giving people an opportunity to be the fish out of water, even just for a few minutes or a few seconds,
mm-hmm.
and then we have the awareness, make a decision to do something different, and then hopefully act by the time we're back in the water. But
right.
It's really like, it's really complicated, because it feels so true. Like if I do something for me, then I feel I'm betraying my family. That's a strong feeling, you know,
mm-hmm.
and to go against that, and you know, it's really hard. And to know, like when I was in that meeting yesterday pitching my new film, I said, the joke's on us, because really the barrier is that we feel like is like steel. It feels so real, but really it's like a tissue. It's that thin,
mm-hmm.
but we don't have that awareness. And I agree, like human beings live by a set of rules. Like I can't do this. They can, and I can't, for so many things. I can't mm-hmm. have this, even though they can, you know? And so it's really, you know, taking it and on top of the humanity part, taking it in, overlaying a cultural set of rules. So there's like a human set of rules and then a cultural set of rules. It's fascinating.
And then I'm sure it's the same way in an individual family too, because my dad wanted a boy and my mom wanted a good Catholic girl. So there was, she wanted me to be a housewife, marry the boy next door. And my dad was like, go play, run around, kick any boy's butt. Let me show you how to throw a football. So even in my family, just with the three of us, there was that conflict. So I can't imagine culturally how, with the family versus the entire culture. But let me ask you this, because I'm listening to you talk and I used to be an actor. I know what filmmaking does. How were you different after you made that film?
Oh my gosh. Thanks for asking that question. It's funny. I was transformed. I feel like the biggest benefactor. And in a way, it's almost like my selfishness, like it was like the biggest selfish act, the most generous act of selfishness.
I love that. Generous act of selfishness.
Writing that down. We're all writing that down. Everyone at home. Most generous act
That's
of selfishness.
That's a great meme. Because I really won biggest, I feel like. And because I got to see it from the other side. I got to work through so much stuff. Like there was no way I could come out this the other end and still be the same person, especially since it was about my life story and things I chose to share, things I didn't, things I decided to keep in, it was an unprecedented amount of personal transformation that I put myself through. And I kind of kicked and screamed throughout it. And the funny thing is, the thing I was the most afraid of was that people would know me, and which is funny and ironic since I knew all along that we were making a film about my life. So of course, but like I was so afraid to be known that I was terrified the first time we screened the film, and it was here in New York City when we screened it, And I remember feeling like this was the biggest mistake I have made in my entire life. Like now everyone's going to know about my life. And now like it's over, you know, like to really be known. Cause I feel like that's what people want in many ways, but it's really hard to be the idea to be that feeling of being exposed and people knowing about and really just facts. It's not like, it's bizarre and warped how preoccupied I was with that, and how 3 years later and 109, I just did my 109th event that's related to the film. Good. And it's been the biggest gift of my life to be known. It's incredible to be known and to have people know and like me anyway, and maybe even like me more.
Well, I think the more we actually know a person, the more we actually like them.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so, but again, it's scary to do that. Cause like, I mean, I can only imagine, you know, you sitting there and having kind of this, you know, everybody's going to be watching this now. And you're kind of looking around like, cause I know there's a lot of actors, they never watch their movies.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Right. Because I think it's that same thing. It's like, nope, I don't want to see, I'm just going to trust that the director did whatever, you know, I did my job, boom, moving on. Mm-hmm. Kind of thing where you're actually like watching it all the time and seeing people's actual reaction to it.
And there's a vulnerability to that, and there's an exposure to that. It's walking down the streets naked to show all of this life. And I had a client yesterday I was doing some coaching work with. She has a story that she's trying to work on. It's not even a personal story, and she doesn't want to bring it into the light. For some reason, she can't get this story out onto paper. I don't know why. I mean, she's not writer's block. She told me the entire story, but she can't put it on paper. She said, because then it becomes real. And I'm sure that's, you know, and I'm sure that's the same thing for you, is if I show this to everybody, I'm exposing my inner little kid, which is a very scary thing. I mean, you're bearing your soul, which is amazing. And once again, we've blown through a very quick half an hour. So we do this. We're like, blah, blah, blah. And then we realize we're done. We have a couple minutes left. Jason, anything you want to, I'll let you wrap and then we'll go back to.
Well, yeah, because what I wanted to do is, you know, we've had a great discussion, but I wanted to kind of leave the listeners with some takeaways too. So maybe Denise, if you can just kind of share, I mean, you kind of shared your story and I mean, we can see and feel the emotion that you had kind of doing this project, the impact it's having on people, but maybe give some tips on what did you learn through the process, right? Like what are some things that people need to do and how you kind of help people do that, right? Because again, it's like, okay, we all realize this now, but now what are we going to do about it, right? Because realization is like, it is the first step, but now what do we have to do to kind of work through that and kind of move forward? And so you've actually personally had to do this yourself, right? So yeah. What are the steps you kind of did, what you learned, and then how you try to help people, or the steps that you give people to kind of help them get through that process too?
Yeah. So I would say, first, a lot of people, when they hear me, they'll say, some people will say this, like, I don't know what I'm passionate about, or I don't know what the thing is I would do. We're different. You and me are different. And I would say to anyone that feels like that, look and see if you really want to know what your passion is and like what you're here to do, look and see what you always talk about, because this is all I ever talked about. I just was very limited in my ability to talk about it because I didn't have any on the ground experience beyond, my life experience, but I didn't have all the interviews. I interviewed over 100 people. I had so hours and hours and hours of additional conversation about it. Now I just have so much clarity about this thing that I was so fascinated with. And so it's like that magnificent obsession. I forget like who said that, or maybe Wallace Waddles. I don't know. Someone said the Think and Grow Rich guy. I'm not sure, but like someone talked about a magnificent obsession, and like, we're all obsessed with something. I don't care if it's video games or I don't know what, but like, look and see what you're obsessed with and what you would talk about and what you would talk about for free. And that's really where the passion lies and where the potential future for you lies. Mm-hmm. And the second biggest thing is, listen, it's so cliche, but like, my head effed me up. Like, my head was telling me like, you're not this, you're not that. And my head would say, you're not skinny enough. Anything that I was like preoccupied with about my own enoughness and my own ability to accomplish anything in life, it's like my mind showed me all the ways I couldn't do it. And it just brought up the past, but my heart was saying, no, like I just always saw opportunities. I would watch My Big Fat Greek Wedding, or I would see an example of something in the world where I felt like this is where this conversation could be inserted. This is where this conversation could add to the, could add and enhance people's experience. But I was terrified to deal with my demons, and the demons, that was the gift. The gift was, if you do it, you deal with the demons, but that's the gift. And like I said, it really does feel selfish, and it does feel like I'm the biggest benefactor, because I'm the one that won the biggest. And it's because I got to have to look at what about me feels like I'm not good enough for this. And I had to like tear down those belief systems. Otherwise I wouldn't have been able to finish. And I certainly wouldn't have been able to have the resilience to continue to go and travel all over the country, continue to share confidently, right? The message. And really, it's like layer by layer by layer, but that's the opportunity. And I know it's terrifying, and it's so worthwhile. And so really what I do is I only listen here. And this is always there. It's like it's like the devil and the angel. Sometimes I feel like this is the devil and this is the angel. And Latinos always say, and then there's your mother, the devil, angel, and the mother, a separate thing altogether. But anyway, so yeah, that's what those two big things is what I would say made the biggest difference for me.
Mm-hmm. And I have one last question. What do your parents think of this?
Well, at first, my mom, I would say, was very concerned about the making of the film. And that was just it was a very hard chapter of our relationship. Mm-hmm. But then she came around, and we were joking about it yesterday at my meeting, and saying that at first she was opposed to it, but then when it came out, she was very excited. And then any screening that happens in the New York area, even up to Boston, she shows up for. And mm-hmm. She'll take the mic first. I'm like, okay, so are there any questions? My mom's hand goes up first, and then she like owns that mic for however long she wants it. And so I always kind of have to let her do her thing.
That's great.
But, so she's a big fan now. But at first, no, it was hard. It was almost too hard. It almost stopped me from doing it. I had to make a decision and almost risk the relationship. But I decided to keep going and believing that I could do it in a way that would honor everyone whose story is also a part of my story,
That's so great. So why don't you tell everybody how they can reach you, the website, the all that good info, and then we'll move on.
Yeah. So for anyone that wants to see the film, you can watch it right on your computer at enyethemovie.com. So it's E-N-Y-E, themovie.com. And you can watch it right there on your computer. And then if you want to hear about the next thing, so there's going to be people that listen that are going to be thinking about the ideas that I just shared. They're going to see the movie. The stuff's going to swirl around even more. And I have a program for that. And it's really awesome. Around unlocking your own dreams and supporting people to get to the point B person, which is, I talk about a lot. Point A was afraid. And that point A is, we're always at point A today. And the aspirational version of ourselves is point B. The person that I see myself that I could be, the person that can make another film and have that win awards too. And the person that could do the next thing in the great way that I kind of ideate that it could happen, you know, that version of me. So I help people get to kind of presence point B for as long as they'll allow me to in my program. And many women that have joined the program, it's called the Enya Dream Accelerator, have created their dream job, their dream life, and taking trips around the world, speaking. Someone just, you know, started a new online program, writing books, getting trademarks and copyrights. I mean, crazy things that people have just put on the shelf and put on hold. They get in my program and they're like, you know what? No, now is the time. I'm doing it now. And so that's the kind of the promise of the program.
So great.
And I'm glad. got a little something in my throat there. Ah!
We're doing so well. And then there goes Jason.
Okay, all right. But I'm glad that you're doing that because I hope one of the things that the listeners heard as we were going through this is when you come to the realization and you've got to start making a change, it's hard. Mm-hmm. It's hard and you need help to be able to do it. Right. And so having an opportunity for that. And again, I mean, your movie is literally going to impact millions of people, right?
Oh, thanks, Jason.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. It really is.
Totally. I mean, and again, I mean, you're working on a new film. Everybody's going to know who you are, right? Mm-hmm. But again, it's even your journey. It's hard. You need help mm-hmm. along the way. You need to have that courage. You need other people around you. Right. Because I know you didn't talk about the particular story, but I know like they talk about in the movie, right? When you're in Miami, mm-hmm. and you finally have that realization, like, hold it. I am not the only one who feels this way because, you know, these 10 people that are in this club with me, they're all saying the same thing. Mm-hmm. Right? And so when you can become a part of a group like that, then you realize you're not alone. And other mm-hmm. people have done this and other people can do this and they will give you encouragement. They will support you along the way. And so, you know, like I said, not only the movie, but what you're doing with these women in the Enya, I know it's EDA, Enya Dream Accelerator.
Yes.
is actually putting the rubber to the road and literally transforming these women's lives. Mm-hmm. So you're having a big impact. I know you said you got a lot out of this, but I know you're giving a lot back to the world and that's,
we need thank
more people
you.
Doing that. So
thanks, Jason.
Yay. Well, this has been a phenomenal episode. This has been such an awesome cover. We have the best conversations. You're amazing. Thank you so much for what you're doing. Thanks for finding her, Jason. we have to sign off or this will be a 30-hour podcast.
I know.
I'm Kathy Gruver and I can be reached at kathygruver.com.
And I'm Jason Mefford. I can be reached at jasonmefford.com. And we'll see you on a future episode of the Fire and Earth podcast. See ya.
See ya.
Bye. Thank you.
We'll be right back.